a lawyer stood up to test Jesus. "Teacher," he said, "what must I do to inherit eternal life?" Jesus, in typical Jewish rhetorical style, turns the question back on the questioner. "What is written in the law? What do you read there?" The lawyer answered, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." And Jesus said to him, "You have given the right answer. Do this and you will live. Do this and you will live." If we're paying close attention, and if the questioning lawyer was genuinely interested in what he had just heard, he would have stopped right there. Loving the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind should be a lofty enough goal without even taking into consideration the down-to-earth, practical, everyday application of loving your neighbor as yourself or loving your neighbor and yourself. If the lawyer really took to heart the depth and breadth of this commandment, he would not need to question who was his neighbor. Because from the beginning, he would have been crestfallen, as we all are, that we fall so short of loving the Lord our God with all our heart and soul and strength and mind. The lawyer, in a response that in our current vernacular would be deemed snarky, retorts to Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" And Jesus tells him a story that most of us are very familiar with, the story known as the Good Samaritan. A story that could have just as easily gone down through history being known as the bad priest and Levite. The timing of this story in our world this week could not be more poignant. Who is my neighbor? Who is it that I am to love? How far am I to go? What is really expected of me? Those questions are at the heart of what the lawyer and all of us are asking. The lawyer and probably we, if we are really honest, are looking for loopholes, for exceptions to those we are to love and care for with as much ferocity as Jesus cares for each of us. The story Jesus tells the lawyer and those gathered around him is one where those who would expect to care did not. And the one who was expected to turn a blind eye to the man in need did just the opposite. He cared, and he cared in abundance. The first to come upon the scene was a priest, the Holy of Holies in Jesus' culture then, the one who interceded between the people and God. And the expectation was that the representative of God, the priest, would surely behave in a godly fashion, but he did not. It's been said that perhaps he did not want to be defiled by touching a man he presumed to be dead. And that certainly might have been what was going through the priest's mind as he kept going on his way, ignoring the need right in front of him. Jesus does not seem to have much use for our excuses, no matter how virtuous we believe them to be. The second passerby is a Levite, a member of the priestly family, again, one of high esteem in the community, that everyone would presume would do the right thing, and again, fall short. Then finally, a Samaritan, one of those people, our detestable cousins with questionable religious practices and invalid credentials, one we do not want to have anything in common with, and would certainly presume would not have the moral fortitude to do the right thing, shocks us into consciousness because he not only cares for the naked, bleeding man, he goes above and beyond. He doesn't just call an ambulance. He carries the man himself, pays for his care, stays with him to be certain that he's going to be okay, then leaves his own credit card to cover any additional expenses that are needed. The lawyer's mind is certainly blown wide open. All snarkiness is wiped away. And when Jesus asked who was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robbers, the lawyer gave the correct answer: the one who showed mercy. And Jesus said, "Go and do likewise." Who are the bad guys? And who are the good guys? In our cultural history, the bad guys always wear black and the good guys wear white. And that is a bad tradition. Subtle subliminal messages have an effect on our perception. Billions of dollars are spent each year to entice us to like and purchase one product over another. The fact of the matter is that there are bad white folks and good white folks, and bad black folks and good black folks. There are bad priests and Levites and good Samaritans. And we must not lump all folks together as being bad or all being good. And within each and every one of us, there is a capacity for good and a capacity for bad. Within each and every one of us that is made in the image of God, and that is each and every living human being, there is a capacity for good and a capacity for bad. We must stop lumping folks into categories of all. We must look at folks as each person we encounter, one by one. There is a surge of violence in our world that probably will not come to a screeching halt on its own. There's likely to be more violence because we have the misguided notion that we should fight fire with fire or firepower with firepower. There is no Jesus in that sort of thinking. The violence that is all around us and at any moment could come into our midst, could lead us to be so fearful and mistrusting of each other that we could be drawn to the depths of depression. We could easily be overwhelmed by despair. There is no Jesus in that either. On May 5th, I attended seminary graduation at Suwannee. The preacher at that service was Russell Kendrick, who until his election as Bishop of Central Gulf Coast was the rector of St. Stephen's in Birmingham. Russell told a story about an experience he had when doing his bishop's visit to St. Paul's in Mobile during Mardi Gras. And as you probably know, Mobile actually started the Mardi Gras celebration in our country that is now so famously celebrated in New Orleans. Mardi Gras is a big deal in Mobile. And there was a parade passing by right after the services on Sunday. So Russell was standing out on the steps of the church to watch the parade when a man who appeared to be homeless came up to him and struck up a conversation. The man looked up at the church and asked Russell, "Is that the place where they have plays?" And Russell said, "No, it's a church." The man looked puzzled, then asked Russell, "What is it that you do in there?" What a great question. What is it that you do in there? And what Russell said was, "We offer hope." What a good answer. We offer people hope. This afternoon, we will begin our fifth year of Foothills Day Camp. Many people will tell you, rightfully, that Foothills Day Camp provides a camp opportunity for children ages 6 to 10 who would not be able to go to summer camp. And that is true. And that is one aspect of what Foothills Day Camp is about. One very, very small aspect of what Foothills Day Camp is about. What Foothills Day Camp is really about is hope for our future. One by one, we are bringing folks together who would not otherwise get to know each other. One Anniston High School youth is sleeping in a bunk next to one Donahoe High School youth. Actually, there are more than that. One 10th Street Elementary School third grader is canoeing with a White Plains third grader. We're helping people to see each other as people, not those people. We are forming friendships and learning to trust each other and depend on each other. And through this one little thing of Foothills Day Camp and all the other wonderful ministries of Grace Church, I believe that we are offering people hope. Hope that in this space, in this place, the world is a little less fearful. That trust can replace mistrust. And that walls that divided can be replaced by bonds that draw people together. The world is still a very fearful place. But here, there is hope. We are to offer hope. With Jesus, there is always hope.